Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Adjustable firmness on each side helps keep you asleep and improves your sleep quality. My husband sleeps at a very firm 100, and lately I've been keeping my sleep number at 45. Neither of us has to couch sleep or go to the guest room if we need a different type of support. With just the click of a button, I have exactly the bed I need night after night. Discover the Sleep Number Smart Bed, the only bed that lets you adjust each side to your ideal firmness and comfort, your sleep number setting. Sleep better together, only at Sleep Number Store or sleepnumber.com. State Farm helps you win by helping you create an affordable price just for you. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hi, Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Ashley Flowers.
And I'm Britt.
And the story I have for you today is a cautionary tale. One about assumptions and rushed judgments and games of telephone that spiral out of control, and how all of these things can cloud our vision and make us miss what's right there in front of us. This is the story of Maria Marta Garcia Belsunce. It's a little before 7 p.m. on a Sunday in late October 2002 when a 50-something-year-old retired stockbroker named Carlos Carrascosa is driving the few short blocks home from his in-laws' house. And by the way, when I say in-laws, I'm talking about his wife, Maria Marta's half-sister, Irene, and her husband, Guillermo. So, like, not her parents' kind of in-laws.
Got it.
Anyways, Carlos and Guillermo are buddies, and they had spent the evening watching a huge national soccer match together, like pretty much everyone else there in Argentina. When Carlos pulls into his driveway, he's a little surprised to see one of his neighborhood security guards, Jose Ortiz. He's parked in a golf cart out front, and he's also confused that there aren't any other cars parked in the driveway, other than Maria Marta's, because he knows that she had a massage scheduled for 7 p.m. at the house. It's part of her weekly routine. But as soon as he talks to Jose, he finds out why. Jose explains that Beatriz, the masseuse, is at the entrance of their gated community waiting to be let in, but the guards haven't been able to reach Maria Marta on the phone. And she's waiting at the entrance because this is the type of neighborhood where guests have to be authorized to enter. So this guard says that he stopped by to see if he'd have better luck knocking on the front door, but he kind of got the same thing, no answer. Now, Carlos doesn't quite know what's up, but he gives Jose the go-ahead, you know, go ahead, let Beatriz in, because he knows this is his wife's plan. I mean, she told him as much when she stopped by her sister's while they were watching the game. She said her tennis match had gotten rained out, she was going to go home and take a bath before the masseuse arrived. So he's thinking, okay, maybe she's still just in the bath or something. Didn't hear the phone, didn't hear the door. But before he even enters the house, he is surprised yet again because he realizes that the door is unlocked. And I think that's kind of unusual for, like, their normal routine. So he's climbing the stairs, yelling out for his wife, getting no response. And when he reaches the top, he sees that their bedroom is full of steam. But it's not until he steps in and gets a peek into the ensuite bathroom that he realizes that something is wrong. Something is very wrong. Because his eye is immediately drawn to a pool of blood on the bathroom floor. He races into the bathroom, and that's when he sees her. There is his wife, fully dressed, but draped over the side of the tub, face down in the water. And the water isn't clear like it should be. It is crimson, blood red. Panicked and confused, he pulls her out, lays her down on the floor in the doorway between the bathroom and the bedroom, and just then he hears tires outside on the gravel driveway. It's the masseuse, Beatriz. So he runs to the window and yells at her to come in, that Maria Marta had some kind of accident and he needs her help.
So where is this blood coming from?
Well, it looks like it's coming from her head, and there is a lot of it. So Beatriz runs in, she starts trying to resuscitate Maria Marta, and Carlos races to the phone. He picks it up, and he dials Irene and Guillermo.
How about calling for an ambulance?
It's a little strange, but he later explains in an interview for the Netflix docuseries on this case that his mind is just completely blank at this point. And to be fair, I actually don't know if Argentina even has a 911 type emergency service line in 2002. I know they do now, but I actually don't think they do at the time, because he also mentions having to find a number for an ambulance once he hangs up with Irene and Guillermo. Anyways, Guillermo gets there first, and Irene isn't far behind, and she asks if they've called for an ambulance. And I think Carlos might actually be on the phone with the emergency services at that point, trying to give them directions to the neighborhood. And Irene says all she can think to do is to try and go find a doctor. So she runs out into the street, hoping she'll see the ambulance maybe speeding in. There's no sign of one anywhere, though, not even the sound of sirens in the distance. So she runs to the house of a medical student and begs him to come back to Carlos and Maria Marta's with her, which he does, and then he takes over the resuscitation attempts. An ambulance finally pulls up at 7:28 p.m. Inside is Dr. Juan Govry-Gordon, and he asks what happened as he begins administering adrenaline shots and shocks with the defibrillator trying to revive Maria Marta. Carlos immediately says that there had been some kind of terrible accident. Maria Marta must have hit her head on the low slung ceiling beams above the bathtub and passed out, or maybe she passed out and then struck her head maybe on the bathtub faucet. But whatever happened, it definitely involved a blow to the head. And I assume he's saying that because of all the blood coming from her head. And honestly, to Carlos, this is the only explanation that makes sense, because he'd actually seen something like this before. His mom relied on sleeping pills and alcohol to sleep, and one morning she had been disoriented and tripped and hit her head on the bathroom sink. Carlos was actually the one who found her sprawled out on the floor unconscious. Now, she survived, but, I mean, it was a serious injury. She had, like, permanent brain damage from it. I mean, yeah, so this is, like, literally a scene that he's, like, seen before. It's happening all over again.
Yeah.
Now, by the time a second ambulance pulls in at 7:43... with another doctor named Santiago Biasi, it is clear that Maria Marta is beyond saving. Everyone gathers in the living room, almost stunned into silence. It is then that Dr. Govry-Gordon makes a fateful request to Beatriz, one that he will actually come to regret. The scene upstairs is shocking. I mean, there is just so much blood, and the doctor doesn't want Carlos or the rest of the family to have to see that. At least, not again, especially now knowing that Maria Marta is gone. So he asks Beatriz to grab a bucket and grab some towels and clean things up.
He does what now?
Yeah. And, I mean, no one tells Beatriz not to, and no one thinks to, like, stop her. So she does what she's asked by this doctor. She heads upstairs. She cleans up the bloody scene. And actually, according to that other doctor, Dr. Biasi, Dr. Govry-Gordon himself cleans up Maria Marta, wiping blood from her face and head. And it's interesting because that night actually turns into a kind of vigil for Maria Marta's family and friends. Now that she's cleaned up, I mean, she almost looks peaceful. So the family dresses her in clean clothes. They lay her out on her bed for visitors to pay their respects, say their goodbyes, which isn't anything I've really seen before, but it made me wonder if culturally, this is the norm. And I tried to figure it out for myself online. I wasn't having much luck. Then I was like, had this moment where I was like, oh, duh, we have amazing crime junkies all over the world. We even have some from Argentina.
Which, like, of course we do. It will never stop being cool that crime junkies are just everywhere.
I know. It's amazing. And I actually found a crime junkie that totally came through. She said that she has never seen it happen, but she asked her parents, and they said it was totally standard back in the day to have a wake in the house for someone who had died at the home. So I just think it's important to have those, like, cultural contexts, because, like,
for
again,
sure,
we would see that and be like, oh, my God, so suspicious. But actually, turns out this is not that abnormal for the time and for the place. So family and friends are milling in and out all night. And the inner circle, which is Carlos, the family, her closest friends, they decide that they want to hold her funeral the next day on Monday, October 28. But in order to hold a funeral, they will need a death certificate. Neither Dr. Govry-Gordon or Dr. Biasi will issue one. So Guillermo and a close family friend named Michael Taylor volunteer to find a funeral home that will issue a death certificate on a Sunday night without examining her body.
This is super weird, though, right?
Yeah, just wait. So the first place that they go to is like, yeah, we're not going to give you a rush job funeral or like a rush job death certificate either. Like, you're going to need a proper medical exam. But Guillermo and Michael are like, nah, no thank you on that medical exam. Like, we need to keep things moving. So they take off to the Capitol to find a place that will.
So they're just like pathologist shopping.
Basically. And they do get what they're shopping for. Because they find a place that, without even seeing Maria Marta, they're willing to give them a death certificate to take home, which...
What?
Yeah, in my mind, I'm like, how?
You can't even tell the person's actually dead if you can't see them.
Yeah, I'm like, forget the exam. Like, can I just go and be like, my best friend, Britt, I'm going to need a piece of paper. Like, to me...
Wait, like, this person isn't even there to, like, check a pulse.
No. Even to take a look. Forget the pulse. Like, the whole thing is just screaming fishy. But it's not until the next morning that someone else begins to get that feeling, too. And that's Maria Marta's half-brother, John. He calls their brother, Horacio, and is like, hey, maybe we should have a trained pathologist take a look at Maria Marta's body after all?
Yeah, you think?
Well, Horacio doesn't. He thinks it's unnecessary. But he happens to be a relatively high-profile journalist, meaning that he does have connections. And he doesn't want to just blow his brother off. So he basically calls up a personal friend who is also a top-ranking national judicial official. He explains the situation, and the friend is like, okay, my man, no problem. Let me get the provincial police on the line. We'll get someone out there to take a look at things. We'll put your brother's mind at ease. Soon enough, a young prosecutor by the name of Diego Molina Pico and the on-duty police commissioner are at Maria Marta and Carlos's house, where the family has all gathered again. Diego takes a look at Maria Marta's cleaned-up body. He talks with the family. Everything seems like it checks out. And it looks to him like her death was the accident that the family says it was. But he agrees to do just kind of a cursory investigation anyway, just to make sure everything is on the up and up. But it's clearly just a formality to everyone, because he gives the family the go-ahead to bury Maria Marta that day, like they planned.
So do they do the autopsy or not?
No autopsy. Diego is just going to look into the circumstances around her death. He's basically fine accepting most of the facts as is. He's just going to, like, schedule some time to interview everyone, check some boxes. You know what I mean? Like, just, like, go through the motions a little bit.
Right.
But it doesn't take long for him to regret that decision, because when he interviews Dr. Biasi, that second emergency doctor who was there that night, the story he tells has Diego shook. So shook, in fact, that Diego ends up cutting him off mid-sentence so that he can go grab his secretary. And he brings her in and makes Dr. Biasi start the whole thing over again because he needs someone else to hear this.
The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Everyone is still talking about Monopoly Go for a good reason. It is an absolute hit. Millions of people pass Go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Like countless crazy tournaments you can join with your friends as partners or teams, or timed events offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums, delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches, unique playing pieces, and so much more. The verdict is in. With Monopoly Go, there's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now free on the App Store and Google Play.
According to Dr. Biasi, Maria Marta's death wasn't an accident at all. Couldn't have been further from it. In the Netflix docuseries, which is called Carmel, Who Killed Maria Marta? The English translation of the phrase that he uses to describe it is a, quote, violent and dubious death. Because he says when he attended to her body, there wasn't a chance she died in some accidental slip and fall that couldn't possibly explain the three holes he found in her skull.
I don't understand why this is coming out now. I mean, this doctor has been here for a while. Where was he when they were just like, oh, yeah, let's just bury her and get on with this?
Million-dollar question, right? Now, by the time he's getting this information and, like, all the red flags are going up, he's 2 weeks into his investigation, and he realizes that he still hasn't received the death certificate from Maria Marta's family. So he's thinking, okay, maybe if I can get that, maybe that's going to clear up this whole thing. So he tells Horacio that he needs that pronto, and Horacio is like, listen, no problem. I'm going to get that death certificate from Carlos, which he does. And then when that gets passed off to Diego, it's still, like, in the envelope and everything. I mean, they just, like, literally hand this thing on. Diego opens it, hoping to find just a routine piece of paperwork for him to file away, showing that Dr. Biasi was mistaken, that Maria Marta had just slipped and hit her head, like the family says, which would be a tragedy for sure, but an accident all the same. But what he sees instead is bogus. I mean, worse than bogus, it's straight up fraudulent. Because this thing, which obviously we know it couldn't be completely accurate because they didn't even see her, but what they see is that it says she died from natural causes, a heart attack. And the wild part is it doesn't even say that she died at their home or even in the city that their home is in, but it says that she died in the capital.
So Guillermo and Michael didn't even give whoever they got this piece of paper from, like, the slip and fall story, tell them any details about where this happened? Nothing?
Diego doesn't know, because he's wondering, like, did they tell the funeral home that issued this something different? Or did this place just get it wrong, a miscommunication, maybe outright negligence? I mean, clearly this isn't an operation getting hung up on details.
Right.
And like I said, it was still in the envelope. Horacio says that he didn't even look at it. So maybe the family didn't even realize the discrepancy. I mean, there could be some kind of explanation, but either way, it doesn't sit well with Diego, especially considering Dr. Biasi's claims. And so now Diego's on a mission to get to the bottom of this. So he calls Horacio in for an interview. And on top of everything else, we got Dr. Biasi's story, the bogus death certificate. Horacio mentions something new, something that was found at the scene. He calls it a quote-unquote pituto, which the Netflix series translates to thingy in English.
Ashley, I'm gonna need something more than thingy.
More than thingy, yeah, I know. Well, he says that it's this small piece of metal. Maybe it's lead. And the best he can do is compare it to, like, a shelf lug, like those little pieces of metal that stick out in a cabinet or whatever for a shelf to rest on.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So by the way, this thingy wasn't just at the scene, it was under Maria Marta's body.
Okay. And where is this thingy, this pituto now?
Well, he says that John was the one who spotted it on the floor after Maria Marta's body was moved to the bed. And I guess John had asked Horacio what it was. And Horacio says that he was like, I don't know, man, go ask Carlos. We're in his house. So John goes and asks Carlos. Carlos was also like, I don't know, how the heck should I know? What does it even matter at this point? Because, I mean, even after everything was, like, cleaned up, the scene was still chaos. There was all kinds of random medical supplies tossed haphazardly around, I mean, syringes, gauze, vials, whatever. So they all, I guess, assumed that it was nothing. And then he said that John just kind of scooped it up and then flushed it down the toilet.
What?
Yeah.
Are they flushing all the other stuff that's thrown around? Like, that's not even a rational explanation of where to put this thing.
Yeah, Diego would agree with you. It's suspicious. So when John comes in for his interview, Diego obviously confronts him about the thingy, and he even has John draw him a picture of it. And it turns out that one man's shelf lug looks a lot like another man's spent bullet.
What?
I know.
You're kidding me.
Mm-mm. So Diego tells Horacio that this all stinks to high heaven, and he needs to have Maria Marta's body exhumed for an autopsy.
Which is what should have happened from day one.
Yeah, freaking finally. Like, shoulda, woulda, coulda. But with Horacio's approval, Diego orders his team to exhume her body, and then there is finally an autopsy that happens on December 2nd. That very night, Diego gets a call from the medical examiner, Dr. Flores, who is on one, because just like Dr. Biasi said, he has already found two holes in her skull. He's not even done with the autopsy. And by the way, Dr. Flores isn't even aware of all the weird stuff Diego has been uncovering. And by that, I mean, as far as I can tell, like, Diego didn't tell him about the potential bullet or thingy or whatever, or Dr. Biasi's story about the holes in Maria Marta's head. So initially, when Dr. Flores calls, he is like, this is weird, but he suggests that maybe the holes were made by, like, some kind of blows, maybe from a hammer. But he's like, listen, I'm just calling you because this is wild. Nothing definitive yet. I'm still doing the thing. I'll call you when I know more. Well, then not long after that call, Flores calls back, even more agitated than before. And he's like, FYI, we are up to 5 holes now. And then he calls back again a little bit later. And he's like, yeah, my man, you are never going to believe this, but throw the hammer theory out the window. When we opened her skull, we found 5 bullets lodged in her head.
Oh, my God.
Obviously, any notion of Maria Marta's death being anything but a homicide is set firmly aside at this point. And confirming that the cause of death was gunshot wounds makes the thingy pretty freaking relevant to the investigation now, which has suddenly gone from a standard cause of death inquest to a full-blown homicide investigation.
Yeah, super glad their best piece of evidence was literally just flushed down a toilet.
I mean, not ideal, but also not game over either, because you see, it turns out that their neighborhood isn't hooked up to any kind of municipal sewage system. Instead, each house has an underground septic tank where all their sewage is collected, which means that investigators are about to go through some literally. So they dig into the septic tanks, search through the contents for 9 full hours, and get down to the very last bucket of waste when suddenly, finally, their metal detector starts beeping. They've got it. A .32 caliber long projectile. But not that they have anything to match it to, though. Because their searches in and around Maria Marta's house, trusty metal detectors in hand, don't turn up any signs of a weapon.
Well, yeah, no, I don't think anyone can flush a whole gun down a toilet very easily. And this is happening, what, a month or so later?
At least. I mean, honestly, probably closer to 2. And this almost second month in, this is when Diego has his investigators actually, like, process the crime scene for evidence. So, yes, a lot of stuff could be gone, but there's also some stuff that they find. Because when they spray luminol, the walls light up. And what stands out most, according to Diego, are the finger drag marks. Like, it looks like Maria Marta had tried to grasp onto anything in the struggle with her attacker or attackers. The other important, albeit delayed, discovery that they make is of 3 different unknown DNA profiles intermingled at the crime scene. Now, the problem is I can't find any information on what it's from. Like, if it was, did they pull it from blood or touch DNA or whatever? But I know that testing reveals that the samples belong to 2 unidentified men and 1 unidentified woman. The Argentinian news outlet La Prensa reports that one profile belonging to the person it calls Man 1 was found intermingled with Maria Marta's blood on the bathroom ceiling beams and door frame, as well as somewhere, I think, sort of in the entryway of the bedroom. And then Man 2's profile, meanwhile, was found intermingled with Man 1's profile on a bathroom ceiling beam. And then that female profile was found on the bedroom carpet.
Who have they tested the profiles against? Like, was there anyone at this point?
I think just Maria Marta at this point. And then beyond that, all they know is that there were 3 other people besides her in the bathroom. But they have suspicions of who the DNA might belong to, because at this point, the lawyer representing Maria Marta's family tells Horacio that Diego firmly has his sights set on them.
Them being?
All of them, all of the family. Her husband, Carlos, first and foremost, for both the murder and, I mean, they're saying basically a cover-up. But then in that cover-up, they're saying that her brothers, Horacio and John, could have been involved or were involved. Her sister, Irene, her sister's husband, Guillermo. Even Dr. Gorvy Gordon and Beatrice, the masseuse. And Horacio is outraged when he's told that they're all going to be brought in for questioning again, this time as suspects.
But why? Like, this isn't just a husband and a wife we're talking about here. It's her husband, her family, a random emergency doctor, a masseuse. Not just why, but how do you get all these people to agree to murder or, at minimum, a cover-up?
Well, Diego's still working on the details, to be honest. All he knows is that whatever happened that Sunday evening in October, the family has been doing its damnedest to cover it up. There's the crime scene cleanup, the fraudulent death certificate, the rushed burial, the flushed thingy. And now he's got a few witnesses who claim that the family demanded police be kept away that night, gave orders to guards to not let them in the community at all, and maybe, possibly, even paid someone off. Tired of all the boring activewear out there? Check out Vuori Clothing. Vuori's versatile and comfy products are designed to look great in and outside of the gym, whether you're running, training, or even just weekend lounging. The women's performance jogger is the softest jogger you'll ever own. I actually own three of them in three different colors, and I love them. But also check out the women's daily legging, which features a high-waist drawstring tie and upgraded no-slip fit. For guys, there's the men's core short, the most comfy lined athletic short out there, and the men's Sunday performance jogger. Vuori is an investment into your happiness. For our listeners, they're offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/Chuck. That's Vuori.com/Chuck, Chuck. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/Chuck and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Now, the family totally denies giving any orders to the guards or paying anyone off. But Horacio acknowledges that he had asked some of his friends to hold police off if they could. Not because he was trying to hide anything, he says, or to cover for anyone else, just because they all thought that Maria Marta's death had been an accident and he worried that a police presence would make an already traumatic situation even more traumatic, especially for their parents. And so no cops visit the scene that night. But Diego isn't buying much of anything that the family says at this point. He's even starting to suspect that Carlos's alibi is as bogus as the death certificate. Because he's actually got a couple of staff members from the clubhouse who claim that he couldn't have been at Irene and Guillermo's until close to 7 because he'd actually been at the clubhouse at that point. He was having coffee and limoncello. And Diego thinks that he did that on purpose, that he went there to establish a more public, more verifiable alibi. And when he confronts him, Carlos admits he did go to the clubhouse for coffee and a limoncello that day. I think that's something that he did often, but he says it wasn't in the evening at all. It was after lunchtime.
Okay, what am I missing here? Why would he go out of his way to establish an alibi, which is what Diego is claiming, but then deny he'd been there?
Why indeed? Like, it doesn't make much sense. Unless he isn't making up an alibi. Maybe the witnesses got their time wrong. Or is there a world where he's covering for Irene and Guillermo? Like, maybe he's trying to be their alibi and they're his? Like,
okay, so at this point, is the family, like, a full united front? Or is anyone, like, pointing the fingers at Carlos?
No, they're a full united front. They're behind him 100%. And almost to their own detriment, right? Because, I mean, we know that Carlos is Diego's main target. And in sticking by him, they're almost making themselves look worse in Diego's mind.
Mm-hmm.
But Diego is determined that he's got to get to the bottom of this family-wide cover-up. Because in his mind, the cover-up will expose the truth about the murder itself. The family, meanwhile, swears there is no cover-up. Just a series of decisions and coincidences that maybe don't look great in retrospect. Like, they'll give him that. But they think this is more of a prosecutor who's just hell-bent on connecting dots that just aren't even there. Like, for one, they say Carlos would never want to hurt his wife. I mean, they had a good marriage, by all accounts. Maria Marta was young when they got married, but, I mean, they were happy and prosperous. Carlos had enjoyed major success in his career as a stockbroker, which allowed him to retire at, like, the ripe old age of 50. And I know I haven't even really mentioned Maria Marta's career. She was a respected sociologist who made regular TV appearances with her brother Horacio. And she spent her free time doing what she truly loved, which was philanthropy. And her freedom to balance both was in large part due to Carlos's professional success. I mean, they were a team, but they also respected each other's autonomy. I mean, it seems like these two genuinely liked each other after 30 years of marriage. But that's not really the picture that the public was getting from the media. Because in the months and then the years following Maria Marta's death, her case takes on a life of its own. The public's morbid curiosity is unending, along with their willingness to believe just about anything about the family. And bubbling just below the surface, there's this tension, this resentment even, from the Argentinian public at large towards Maria Marta's family. From a socioeconomic standpoint, I mean, their lives are just completely unrecognizable to most Argentinians. And because of that, a lot of people are willing to believe the very worst of them. Of course, they thought they could just throw around some money and have public officials do their bidding. That's what, quote unquote, they do. Everyone knows that justice isn't for the rich people. Only those with fewer resources have to face that. And I mean, if we're honest, I mean, there probably is some measure of truth to that sentiment. So when less reputable media outlets print wild allegations about Carlos and Maria Marta, the public is kind of primed to accept them as fact. The whole thing takes on, I mean, truly major soap opera vibes. And what's a good soap without a lurid plot twist? And they try and spin some doozies. I'm talking everything from Maria Marta was gay to Maria Marta and Carlos didn't have kids because they were actually brother and sister. Just banana stuff. And I don't know how much stock Diego puts into these kinds of allegations. Although, according to reporting by Raul Coleman, he does investigate them. But there is no substance there. Not even any plain old vanilla love affairs. By 2004, though, Diego's ready to go public with some allegations of his own. He thinks that he finally has gotten to the bottom of the conspiracy of silence surrounding Maria Marta's death. Before I get into his theory, though, we have to touch briefly on the concept of the Corralito. You see, Argentina had suffered through an economic crisis in the years leading up to Maria Marta's death. By the end of 2001, there was a real fear that there could be a run on the banks, that everyone would pull all their money out at the same time, and that the nation's whole banking system would collapse as a result. So the government implemented a policy that put a weekly limit on the bank withdrawals. This came to be called the Corralito, which Walter Bianchi explains in his reporting for Reuters, is a reference to banks stockpiling cash in little corrals. Well, Diego has discovered that Maria Marta made not one, but two money transfers during the Corralito, illicitly transferring more than the weekly allotment to a bank out of New York.
Do we know how much?
I don't know. I don't even think they ever say, but the implication is that they were pretty substantial, whatever that means.
Okay, is that it? That's not really a motive for murder.
Well, it might be if that money maybe came from criminals. If you were, say, laundering drug money for the Juarez cartel out of Mexico.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, so Diego thinks that Carlos was more than just a good stockbroker. He believes that Carlos was laundering money for the Juarez cartel. Now, he isn't sure if Maria Marta was in on it knowingly or not. He thinks it was more Carlos's gig, but that maybe he had gotten all of his siblings wrapped up in it, too. And ultimately, he thinks that either Maria Marta was complicit and decided that she wanted out, or she wasn't complicit but had uncovered their secret. Translated court documents printed in the LA Times say that she, quote, formed part of or was very informed of the mafia activity and of the movement of illicit funds, end quote. And then that same article says the documents allege that she was, quote, killed so she would not reveal it to authorities.
What's he basing this on, though?
Well, that LA Times article explains that Diego came to this whole theory when he received an anonymous tip letter. Now, what it says exactly, I don't know, but he gets this letter, and then he found a, quote, cryptic notation in a file on Maria Marta's computer. And basically, he makes a few other connections. Like, do you remember Michael Taylor? Like, he's the family friend who went with Guillermo to get the death certificate.
Mm-hmm.
So his wife is named Nora, but everyone calls her Peachy. And Peachy's sister, Laura, had been suspected of basically being, like, the point person for the Juarez cartel in Argentina. Though, important to note, she wasn't prosecuted for it. A judge had ruled that there wasn't sufficient evidence. So I think that there's, like, this, like, 6 degrees of separation kind of thing. And he's basically claiming that they made transfers to a bank that did business with the Juarez cartel, But that's about it. Like, all these little pieces all over that he thinks are pointing to something, but...
That all seems like a stretch. Like, it's definitely not, like, provable in court, it doesn't seem like.
I mean, yes. So it feels a little circumstantial. It feels like there's... I don't know if it's like a when there's smoke, there's fire kind of situation. But the thing is, these aren't theories coming from a tabloid magazine. Like, theories sound so much more official when officials say them. And so when Diego, a public official, puts this out there, the public eats it up. And whatever he does have, it is apparently enough to charge Carlos with both Maria Marta's murder and with the cover-up of her murder. And that happens in 2004. Along with Carlos, Diego charges basically everyone else. Guillermo, Horacio, John, Dr. Govri, Gordon, Beatrice, the masseuse, even a neighbor named Sergio Bineo with the cover-up. Really, only Irene is left unscathed. And for some reason, the tailors. But the indictment also references two other unknown individuals who were supposedly with Carlos at the house when he killed Maria Marta.
Is that because of those DNA profiles that were found?
Yeah, I think so.
So do any of those profiles match Carlos? I mean, obviously, the guy, like, lives there. I get that the DNA was mixed up with the victim's blood. But even so, we know that Carlos handled her body. Even if he is a match, it seems like possible that his DNA could have gotten mixed up in her blood when he was trying to save her.
You're right. But, like,
I don't know.
At the time, you're spiraling a little bit for where we are, because at the time when he's arrested, when they're all kind of charged, we don't know if either of the male profiles match Carlos or anyone else in the family for that matter. And part of the reason for that is that the relationship between the family and Diego has just completely broken down by this point, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
As far as Diego's concerned, they're all conspiring to cover up a terrible crime, which itself was committed to cover up other terrible crimes. And as far as the family is concerned, Diego's a hammer in search of a nail. So they actually refused to provide DNA samples for him for 2 years. And John, Irene, and Horacio all talk about this in the Netflix series. John, for one, says that he would have been totally cool providing a sample as long as the DNA from the crime scene was put into the investigative file. According to Horacio, one judge actually advised them not to provide samples until Diego turned the ones from the crime scene over to the court. And this was a bit confusing to me, like both John and Horacio's explanation. So, Brett, I actually asked you to look into the role of a judge in a criminal investigation in Argentina, because in the U.S., judges don't really have a role in an investigation or overseeing the investigative files. So can you explain what you found?
Yeah. So I got all this from the U.S. Department of Justice's webpage on the Argentinian criminal justice system. And that says, quote, "The investigation of crimes is theoretically a judicial function, vested in an agency headed by magistrates called investigating judges," end quote. And then it says that any trial is then presided over by a different judge, or like maybe a set of judges.
Okay, so best I can tell, John and Horacio are basically saying the same thing, that once the crime scene samples become part of the investigating judge's file, they'll be happy to cooperate. But as long as they're just in Diego's control, like, they're not going to play ball. And Irene is even blunter about her reservation. She is sure that Diego would flat out fabricate the results if it were left up to him. Basically just claim that their profiles are a match even if they weren't.
So there's just absolutely zero trust at this point.
Not even a smidge. And what definitely doesn't help their cause is the fact that other people do provide voluntary samples, like neighborhood guards, stuff like that. And none of those are a match. So Carlos is the first to go to trial in 2007, around 5 years after Maria Marta's death. And it's around this time that the family finally relents. They provide the samples. And it turns out Carlos, Horacio, John, Guillermo, and Irene are all ruled out as potential donors of those unknown profiles. Now, ask Diego, and he'll tell you that's small potatoes. He can explain it. No, he can't explain it right now, but the results don't change his mind. Now, Carlos's trial lasts months, and the first few months are literally just some guy reading the entire investigative file out loud.
Well, that sounds riveting.
I don't know how you keep anyone engaged, because the first witness doesn't even testify until 2 months in. But at the trial, once testimony actually starts, A childhood friend of Maria Marta's testifies about a conversation she had with Peachy at the Taylor's house after Maria Marta's burial. This friend says that she asked Peachy what had really happened to Maria Marta because she had heard so many different versions of the story. And according to her, Peachy responded that they, quote, did what Carlos told us to do. And they, quote, paid for them to do what Carlos wanted. Which, just for clarification, the implication is an immediate burial and no autopsy.
Which does jive with Guillermo and Michael going to two different funeral homes on a Sunday night, trying to get a death certificate without any examination of her body.
Yeah, that's the part I can't quite get over. I mean, that and the doctor is not saying anything about the holes in her head. But anyways, Peachy denies that any such conversation took place, swears that she never saw Carlos pay for or try to pay for anything. And she's like, to this person who's testifying, I don't even know you. Why would I confess some sinister plot to you, a perfect stranger? And she even accuses Maria Marta's friend of lying in an effort to just get her 15 minutes of fame. So after this, Dr. Biasi also testifies. He says that as soon as he detected the holes in Maria Marta's skull, he told Dr. Gorvry Gordon that they needed to file a police report. But then, like, no one did. And in theory, Dr. Gorvry Gordon is a part of the whole plot. I mean, he's charged as an accomplice in the cover-up, after all. So it makes sense that he wasn't dialing up the authorities. But on that same note, neither was Dr. Biasi.
Which makes you wonder, like, how concerned or alarmed could he have really been?
Yeah, I don't know. And he also testifies that Carlos was unusually calm at the scene. And that at one point, he'd told Dr. Biasi not to worry because he had made, quote-unquote, arrangements with the other doctor. What kind of arrangements he was supposedly referring to, though, is anybody's guess. Now, on the flip side of all of this, Carlo's defense team scores a big win with the medical examiners who performed Maria Marta's autopsy. Because while they did determine that she had been shot, they also said it wasn't obvious just from looking at her body. An Argentinian newspaper called Clarín reports that even once they were examining her body, the only injuries that were immediately apparent were bruise-like ones. Dr. Moreira, who performed the autopsy with Dr. Flores, says, quote, at first glance, only closed, blunt injuries were visible. That is, no open injuries were seen, no injuries caused by firearms were observed. And then he goes on to say, quote, the ordinary person, not a doctor, could not have calmly realized that these injuries were not the product of gunshots. And as far as a doctor not specialized in forensic practices, he could also not have realized. So in other words, only a doctor with forensic training could have realized that Maria Marta had been shot. Because it was only after they shaved her head that they detected any of those puncture wounds at all.
So in other words, it's totally plausible that the entire family actually believed that Maria Marta died in an accident. That even Dr. Gorvry Gordon could have believed that. And they had no intention of hiding how she died because they didn't know. And I think back to the scene, too. She was, like, doubled over in, like, a full bathtub. It looks like an accident.
Right. But Diego manages to find a nefarious explanation for all this, too. I laugh a little. It's not funny. It's just a little absurd. So he basically claims that the family, like, super glued her head wounds closed.
What?
Yeah, he says something called cyanogen was detected on her skull, which he claims is indicative of the presence of super glue. Carlos swears that if anything weird was detected, it would have been from the lice shampoo that Maria Marta used after her philanthropic trips.
Which sounds a heck of a lot more plausible than
super glue.
Super gluing gunshot wounds shut. I've had head wounds that have needed, like, staples. You don't just, like, super glue that shut with no one noticing.
And honestly, like, all this is out the window because the medical examiners quickly rule out the presence of super glue. But it doesn't stop Diego from claiming that it's still there. And I mean, not even just like at the trial. He is still claiming the glue was there, even in the Netflix series, which came out in 2020. Like, this dude is committed to the idea of a grand cover-up. He sees everything through that lens. Inculpatory evidence proves their guilt. Exculpatory evidence proves they're hiding their guilt. And his thing this whole time has been that the cover-up will unravel the murder plot. But what if there is no cover-up? There is still a murder. And actually, Carlos and the family are pretty sure they know who was behind the murder. Someone that they say was right under police's noses the whole time. And they point the finger right at him in court. And I've got a little surprise for you, crime junkies. Part 2 of Maria Marta's story is going to hit your feeds tomorrow. That's right, on a Tuesday. We didn't want to keep you in suspense all week, but if you can't even wait that long, you can listen to it right now in the fan club, which is linked right in the show notes. But we will be back tomorrow with part 2 of Maria Marta's story. You can find all the source material for this episode on our website, crimejunkiepodcast.com.
And be sure to follow us on Instagram at Crime Junkie Podcast.
We'll see you tomorrow with part 2. Crime Junkie is an Audio Chuck production. So, what do you think, Chuck? Do you approve?